Say how effective I am. There's one.
How are you?
Oh, there he is.
Good,
how
are you?
No.
That's the very first thing on the agenda. That's the report. Very first
okay,
thing on the agenda.
Great.
Very good.
That's what you do.
That's what I get paid for.
You're a bus.
That's right.
Yes, sir.
Better you than me. You know what to do under a bus.
Absolutely. I tell my coworkers, you know, if we kill somebody, you do the press event. Yeah. If we do something good, that's the chair.
That's right. That's right. How you doing?
I'm doing good, and I'm going to call a meeting to order.
Huh?
I said I'm doing good, and I'm going to call a meeting to order.
Okay.
So we can fun. Meeting come to order, please. Of Director Bofsky and O'Connor, myself, and Director Katz is in the building and will be in shortly. First item on the agenda, oral update on the tunnel safety and fault investigation report for the West Side Subway extension.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. I'm Paul Taylor, Deputy Chief Executive Officer. About a year ago, the board approved the draft EIS-EIR for the West Side Subway extension and directed staff to continue studying two options for the location of the Century City Station on Santa Monica Boulevard or Constellation. The board further directed that we investigate a variety of issues about the tunnel and the station options in the area. In carrying out the board's direction, our contractors, Parsons Brinckerhoff, conducted nearly 600 field tests along the entire alignment of the West Side Subway extension. More than 200 of those were in this area from Western Beverly Hills through Century City to Westwood, where the tunnel alignment rejoins Wilshire Boulevard. To analyze the data from this area, Parsons Brinckerhoff enlisted the expertise of some of the world's leading geologists and seismologists. Dr. James Dolan of USC, an expert on the earthquake faults and seismic hazards in the Los Angeles region. Dr. Thomas Rockwell from San Diego State, a paleoseismologist and geomorphologist. And Dr. Thomas Henye, a retired professor of earth sciences from USC. The results of these tests have been analyzed and are included in two technical reports being summarized for us today. One is the tunnel safety report, which documents the studies completed to address items specifically mentioned in the board motion of a year ago. The fault investigation report, the second one, documents studies completed at the request of the board to address the potential impact of faults for the station location decision. These reports should be considered as a pair for their interrelationship of seismic and engineering analyses, and therefore they should be read together. The executive summaries of these reports are being passed out and will be posted online today at metro.net/westside. We're working to get the full technical reports posted no later than tomorrow. This work was then reviewed by Drs. Jeffrey Martin, Harvey Parker, and Edward Cording, who comprise our tunnel advisory panel, which was engaged by this agency in 1995 and while we were still constructing the Red Line subway. Their participation has been integral to ensuring best practices in our reviews of tunnel engineering. At the CEO's request, we've also assembled an additional team of experts to provide an independent review of all of this work. The CEO will explain his intent and the purpose of this additional round of evaluation after we hear from representatives of the first two groups. I'd like to remind the board and everyone in the room that no action will be taken on this for several months, nor are we being presented with recommendations today from Metro staff. Staff is still developing recommendations, which will be included in the final EIS-EIR when it is released for public review either late this year or early next year. The Metro Board then will be asked to consider and act on these recommendations, on those recommendations at that time, following an extensive public review period. I want to stress that we put all our projects and programs through the kind of rigorous analysis that you're going to hear about today. Safety is the most important factor for anything that we build or operate, and that's safety for our passengers, for our employees, and for our neighbors. The Tunnel Advisory Committee panel will begin the presentation. Then we'll hear from Dr. Dolan from USC, and after that, Art will introduce the independent review panel. I would suggest to the board that you hold your questions until each group has presented the information to us. Before they begin, let me stress one thing about these experts. They're all speaking today only for themselves. They're not speaking for the universities or the other institutions where they are or have been affiliated. And with that, I'd like to call on Dr. Harvey Parker to speak for the Tunnel Advisory Panel. Dr. Parker?
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. As you have said, there are two studies being presented today. They are about the Century City area. Let me go to the next slide, and we'll give you a close-up of the area that we are will be talking about. Initially, there were two areas, two locations for stations in the Century City area. The first was on Santa Monica Boulevard, and the second was on Constellation Avenue, both centered on about the Avenue of the Stars. As you can see, in order to get to the Constellation Boulevard station, you have to have a tunnel that leads up to it, and that would take you beneath the Beverly Hills High School. So we were asked to look at the safety of tunneling in the entire area from West Beverly Hills, Beverly Hills High School, Century City, and Westwood. And that will be the subject of the next few slides that I give. However, in looking at these two stations, especially the one on Santa Monica Boulevard, we found in our initial geological investigations that the active Santa Monica Fault impacted the station location that was on centered on Avenue of the Stars. And for many reasons, it is unacceptable to site a transit station on an active fault. So in order to keep an option open along Santa Monica Boulevard, we moved the station location up to an area that was on Century Park East. And these will be addressed by Dr. Dolan in his presentations after me. This will be a fault study. So I am pleased to let you know that there have been some enormous and stunning improvements in the tunneling industry's technology and our ability to monitor and control tunneling and the effects of tunneling, especially since the Red Line days. Many of these advancements were incorporated into the 1.7-mile-long Gold Line East Side Extension tunnels, which were constructed in 2006. And that project went extremely well. The tunnels were constructed safely with very little settlement and almost no impact on structures. And this project, the Gold Line project, is indeed a demonstration that the tunneling along Century City will be safe. I point out several similarities. The diameters are the same. They both go through oil fields, go through gassy soil, seismic area. The depths are approximately the same. In fact, it's a little bit deeper in Century City. And which is good because that improves the behavior at the ground surface. The soils are similar, and they're dense, and they're suitable for the tunnel boring machines that we're proposing. One of the startling advancements that we have had in our tunneling industry is the development of this pressurized closed-face tunneling machine. It minimizes ground movements and prevents the entry of excess soil into the tunnel boring machine. So there's little or no ground movement, little or no ground settlement, and therefore little to no impact on buildings. That was the case on the Gold Line, and it is our predicted case in the Century City tunnels, including under Beverly Hills High School. The other important advancement is the development of a new lining system. It's a segmented lining with gaskets, and it is installed right inside the tunnel boring machine. It is gas and watertight, and it's the only lining that you have to install. It's a permanent gas and watertight lining. And as always, Metro and all of our tunnels in California, we use ventilation to prevent gas buildup during tunneling and during operations. And I'd like to point out that there have been some 30 miles of tunnels through gassy ground with no accidents at all. And we have operated some 18 miles of subway for almost 20 years with no problems for gas or whatever. So one of the other issues that has come up is that of noise and vibration, whether those will be a problem in the Century City tunnels. Metro reports there have been no substantiated claims that require mitigation in all of their operations. And we conducted tests at the Beverly Hills High School to make predictions on both noise and vibration. They all are within Federal Transit Administration guidelines. There are two main sources of noise and vibration during tunneling: the tunnel boring machines are short-lived, and the trains that carry materials up to the face are relatively low level. And again, on the Gold Line, there were no substantiated complaints about problems and noise and vibration during tunneling. So on the Century City tunnels, we will specify the same criteria. It will be monitored. It will be controlled. And if there are any substantiated complaints, they will be addressed and mitigated. Looking at oil wells, as we all know that there are wells, both abandoned and active, in the area and, in fact, on Beverly Hills High School. We looked very carefully and made a comprehensive investigation of the oil wells. There are no mapped wells that are on the alignment and on Beverly Hills High School. There is only one mapped well which may be in the way. It's not on Beverly Hills High School, and it's over by Century Park East, and it was abandoned in 1916, and there's some evidence that it may not be at that exact location. So in order to look for potential problems, we conducted a comprehensive investigation using a magnetometer to look for metallic objects. It is really a professional version of the detectors that people use to look for coins on the beach and so forth. They looked at most of the Beverly Hills High School and the general vicinity. There were some metal that was detected. It was close to the alignment. It was over near the west boundary of the lacrosse field. It was not identified as an oil well casing, but it we were not able to fully disclose whether it is or not. And no matter what, we would do a lot more of additional investigation using another magnetometer during final design to confirm that the area is totally clear of wells. And we are proposing another magnetometer survey, which would be conducted in a horizontal boring, which is at about tunnel depth. If there are any potential oil wells that are in the way, there are many proven methods. They exist to treat oil well casings. It's been done several times before, and in fact some in tunnels. Once again, there are 30 miles or more of tunnels built in Los Angeles in oil field areas, and there have been no accidents, and all this is in our tunnel safety report. The project will require tunneling through active faults. There actually are many precedents for successfully tunneling through active faults, several here in Los Angeles, including the Red Line, which goes through the Hollywood Fault. Our testing has indicated that the soils, even in the fault zone, are relatively dense and can be easily handled by the pressurized face tunnel boring machines, which can tunnel through the fault zones safely. They basically are insensitive to small changes in soil conditions. And finally, the installed lining will be designed to accept fault offsets without collapse. So even in active faults, there'll be no problems. We were asked to look at different alignments to see if we could avoid the Beverly Hills High School buildings. We looked at many, and unfortunately there were none that can avoid all of the Beverly Hills High School buildings. So we selected the best alignment for Beverly Hills High School. It passes only beneath the south wing of Building B. It is not below the gym pool building, which is totally out of the zone of influence. Another question has come up about the future development of Beverly Hills High School. It is 70 feet deep to the crown and at Beverly Hills High School, and this will allow future developments, including deep basements and underground parking. No matter whether the tunnels are built first or whether the Beverly Hills High School development is done first, it, of course, requires cooperation between Beverly Hills High School and MTA. But there are many precedents of tunneling under facilities and also building facilities over tunnels throughout the world. And finally, the presence of tunnels does not affect the overlying structures during an earthquake. It does not impact the use of Beverly Hills High School as an emergency evacuation center or shelter, and it will not pose new risks to students, faculty, and community. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Parker. I'd now like to ask Dr. James Dolan to discuss the fault investigation report.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. My job this morning is to briefly summarize for you the results of our fault investigation report. It's obviously important to know where these faults come to the surface so we can avoid putting stations within zones of active surface deformation. Most basically what we're trying to determine is the exact locations of faults that are capable of generating future damaging earthquakes. We want to know where these things come to the surface. This is of critical importance for any infrastructure because when an earthquake ruptures to the surface, it causes significant disruption of any infrastructure within the fault zone. Now, of concern to us today are two major fault systems. These, I emphasize at the outset here that although we're focused on the Century City area here, the two fault zones that we're concerned with are they're parts of very, very long fault systems. What you see here, basically extending east-west, is the Santa Monica Fault. The Santa Monica Fault is the middle part of a very long fault system. You can see it extending here through the area of interest, which we'll get back to in a second, through West LA, out across Santa Monica, goes offshore in Pacific Palisades, extends along the Malibu coast all the way to Point Doom. In the Century City area, it steps to the north. It extends eastward as the Hollywood Fault. It's basically the same fault, though, right through downtown Hollywood. And that fault extends even further eastward all the way to Arcadia as a fault called the Raymond Fault. The second major fault we're concerned with here is identified here as the West Beverly Hills Lineament. We'll talk more about what this is in just a second. We have inferred for a couple of decades that, in fact, the West Beverly Hills Lineament is the northernmost extension of a very long fault system called the Newport-Inglewood Fault System. Shown here, you can see the Inglewood Fault. This fault system extends by various names all the way southward off the coast of Orange County, down through downtown San Diego, and actually down into Baja California. So these are very long fault systems, and it's very important that we understand the details of where these faults come to the surface so we can understand what we would be up against in terms of building any infrastructure in the event of future earthquakes. Zooming in into the area of interest here, you can see some basic features. Now, what this slide is designed to show is where basically the fault zones are. And our first step in any kind of analysis like this actually involves looking at the contours of the landscape. When an earthquake occurs on a fault, and that fault ruptures through to the surface, it deforms the landscape, and it leaves a characteristic signature, if you will, in the landscape. One of the most prominent such signatures is called a fault scarp. It's a thing called a fault scarp. Scarp is just short for escarpment. It's a cliff-like feature that forms when one side of the fault is uplifted relative to the other. Now, all of you, everybody in this room, has seen this fault scarp. Shown here in this dark gray color are the scarps I mapped about 20 years ago, showing the approximate location of the Santa Monica Fault. The ground surface, this deformation of the ground surface, is extremely important because it shows us basically where the most recent active deformation associated with slip on this fault in ancient earthquakes is located. Now, I said everyone's seen this. If anyone has ever driven along Santa Monica Boulevard, all you have to do is look to the north, and most of the roads going off to the north will go up a little hill just along the north side of Santa Monica Boulevard. That is the scarp of the Santa Monica Fault. Perhaps most prominently out here, right at Overland, is that beautifully green sloping lawn of the Mormon Temple. That's the most beautifully manicured fault scarp you're ever going to see in the world. All right. So we've all seen this thing. So that tells us basically where the fault is. Now, the Santa Monica Fault, as I said, extends over to here. It then jumps to the north along Benedict Canyon and turns into the Hollywood Fault to the east. Now, the other major feature of interest to us, shown in these in this USGS and California Geological Survey compilation map by these yellow lines here, is the West Beverly Hills lineament. Lineament just means a linear topographic feature. Now, I mapped this thing also 20 years ago, and what this is it's an absolutely fundamental boundary in the topography of this part of the LA Basin. To the east, out here in Beverly Hills, it's very flat. It's a gently sloping alluvial plain, no uplift. Out in contrast, as you come westward across the West Beverly Hills lineament, you immediately go up into much more hilly country. So we've all seen this. We all know that Century City, for example, is higher topographically than Beverly Hills. This is a manifestation of this West Beverly Hills lineament. Now, what do we know about activity of these faults? Well, we did an exhaustive study of this Santa Monica Fault a couple miles west of here out on the VA property grounds about 15 years ago, published in 2000. This showed that this fault has generated an earthquake between about 1 and 3,000 years ago and that it's obviously active and capable of generating large earthquakes. The West Beverly Hills lineament is directly on trend with, oriented parallel to and on trend with, the northern end of this big Newport-Inglewood fault system. So by inference, that fault, the Newport-Inglewood fault, is certainly active. As some of you may know, it generated a very famous earthquake in 1933, which led to the first passage of the Field Act for the first building codes in California. All right, so what we have here is two major active fault zones, and the topography gives us their approximate locations. Zooming into the area, what we actually did in this study is an absolutely exhaustive. This took many, many months. It took for many, many different people doing an absolutely exhaustive study to try to find the exact locations of where these faults come to the surface. This is obviously what we want to know if we're going to build infrastructure. Now, the geomorphology, you know, the landscape, you know, these fault scarps I was talking about, they do a really good job of showing you approximately where the faults are. But if you're going to build any subsurface infrastructure, you have to do these site-specific detailed studies. These are summarized here. What you can see in these red lines are individual fault strands, in this case associated with the Santa Monica Fault. This is Santa Monica Boulevard running here for reference. Here's Century Park West, Avenue of the Stars, Century Park East, Moreno Drive. All right, so you can see individual fault strands that we've identified in these more than 200 what are called cone penetrometer tests. These are penetration tests. and 56 cores were collected, exhaustively analyzed. We did what's called seismic reflection imaging, which is where you send sound energy down into the ground. Some of it bounces off all these various sand and gravel layers, comes back to the surface. It's like a CAT scan of the Earth. So combining all of this information, we come up with this map. It's hard to see on here, but there's a pink zone outlining all of these various fault strands. This is the zone where we might expect surface deformation. We think we might expect surface deformation in future earthquakes. So that's the Santa Monica Fault running through here. Now, that brings us to the West Beverly Hills lineament. Now, prior to this study, it had only been identified on the basis of topography. Nobody had actually, as far as I know, done any subsurface analysis of this feature. We had, as I mentioned, inferred that this was the northern end of the Newport-Inglewood Fault Zone, but again, nobody had actually verified that. As part of this study, we have discovered...
I'm sorry, sir. Appreciate your enthusiasm and for your work. No, that's great. I think it's great. I need you to slow down just a little bit so I can understand you better, because this is the first time I'm seeing any of this, so I would appreciate...
Sure.
And I write in crayon for me, so...
There you go. Okay, well, as you can tell, I love talking about this stuff. The hard part is getting me to shut up. Okay. All right. What we're looking
at
here...
You do all the stuff for free, you're having such a good time.
All right, so this is a summary map of everything we've done as part of the really, really detailed analysis of where the fault zones come to the surface. And that's the key thing. Of course, we have to know where these things come to the surface. You have to know what you're up against if you're going to try to build anything in this area. Now, what the red dashed lines are, these are individual fault strands that we've identified in these subsurface investigations. And again, I have to emphasize how exhaustive this study was. This is a really comprehensive study involving an unbelievable number of person hours. Now, what immediately strikes your eye is that there are a lot of fault strands. These are not single faults. This is not like the picture we have in our head of the San Andreas splitting a road in half along a narrow zone. These are actually fault zones. And in the case of the Santa Monica Fault, it's actually a fairly complex zone in that the fault strands you can see here where the cursor are dip down to the north. So it's a very, very three-dimensional system. The reason we can see that sloping lawn in front of the Mormon Temple is that during earthquakes, this side of the fault comes up relative to this side of the fault. That's why you have a hill there. Now, the pink zone, again, is shown to encompass all of the strands in the fault zone. And this is meant to show where we think we might see significant ground disruption in future earthquakes. Moving over to the West Beverly Hills lineament, again, what you can see is that it is not a single fault strand. Well, most basically, what you can see is that it is a fault zone comprising many multiple fault strands here. This is the first subsurface data that I'm aware of that confirm that, in fact, this West Beverly Hills lineament is the northern end of the Newport-Inglewood Fault System. It is a fault zone. It's not just a topographic hill. All right, so in summary, what we have is that we have two fault zones here. We've mapped them in great gory detail. And to summarize, just reading these bullet points, the Santa Monica Boulevard station option is shown here. The original station was over here. And what you can see is that the Santa Monica Fault, the original station option on Santa Monica Boulevard is three-dimensionally right within the fault zone. It's in the area that will be disrupted in future earthquakes. The second station option over here is within the fault zone associated with this West Beverly Hills lineament, northern Newport-Inglewood. In contrast, there is this alternative, obviously, tunnel alignment that we've been talking about and an alternative station option down here in Constellation. This is south of all identified strands of the Santa Monica Fault, and it's west of all identified strands of the northern Newport-Inglewood. Moreover, it's not just that we think it's outside this fault zone and we think it's outside that fault zone. It's that we can show that there is no evidence of faulting at the station site. Sedimentary layers are continuous underneath where the tunnel would be. This obviates the possibility that there are active faults here. And with that, let me close the fault investigation report.
Thank you, Dr. Nolan. I'd like to ask Dr. Parker to come back and present the conclusions of the tunnel advisory panel.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. You've seen the presentations both on tunnel safety and on the fault investigation. Here are the conclusions. On the Santa Monica Boulevard, there are active fault zones at both of the proposed sites.
and neither site is acceptable for a station. In fact, there's no zone along Santa Monica Boulevard in which you could site a station. Along Constellation Boulevard, there is no evidence of faulting at the station location, and that station location is acceptable for station. With respect to tunnels, there is enough information for us to conclude that tunnels can be safely constructed under Beverly Hills, West Beverly Hills High School, Century City, and Westwood. Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
Madam Chair, committee members, of course I have complete faith in the qualifications and expertise of our tunnel advisory panel and other experts. Nevertheless, I felt it was important to secure additional and independent review of this material, given the concerns raised about tunneling, engineering, and seismic issues in this area. I am pleased that we were able to secure the expertise of another group of renowned experts. These are, first of all, Dr. Paul Jennings, Emeritus Professor of Civil Engineering and Applied Mechanics and former Provost of Caltech; Lloyd Clough, an expert in seismic safety issues and former Director of the Geosciences Department for Pacific Gas and Electric; Dr. Thomas O'Rourke, Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at Cornell; and Dr. Lucy Jones, Chief Scientist of the Multi-Hazards Demonstration Project for the U.S. Geological Survey and a Visiting Research Associate at Caltech. As with the prior group of experts, these four individuals are speaking for themselves based upon their professional expertise. They have operated completely independent of the previous panels, which you've just heard from, and have reported to me. My only instructions to them were that they were to come to their own conclusions, not incentivized in either direction as to what route might be preferred, and they were to report their findings, whatever those findings might be. I believe we have Drs. Jones and Jennings here to report. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, we were asked as a group to review the studies that you just heard about and to provide our professional opinion of the work. Drs. Clough and O'Rourke are not able to be here today, so Dr. Jennings and I will give you a summary of what we presented to Mr. Leahy. We have four main points that we want to make about this report. And we read all of the materials independently. We met together. We met with the members of the tunnel advisory panel and the scientists who did the work and talked with them about what they did, and then met on our own to discuss what we thought about it. Our main conclusion is these are very professionally done, well-done studies, and we concur with their conclusions about the nature of the area there in the study area. Everything we had no criticism of the methodology. It was very comprehensive. There's a lot of data. I would love to see that amount of data for other fault studies in the future. It allowed us to be pretty conclusive about things. In particular, we want to emphasize that this conclusion that the Santa Monica Boulevard station sites would be dangerous to build in, we completely agree with. To build a subway in Los Angeles, you can't avoid earthquakes, right? They are going to be here, and you cannot avoid faults. You can, however, build effectively around faults, and it's been done in a lot of locations in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, in Tokyo, Mexico City, etc. What you need to do is to cross a fault at a high angle. Right? A fault is there because during an earthquake, one side moves with respect to the other, and that releases shaking as one of its effects. Now, the shaking travels everywhere. But on the fault itself, you're actually having one side, one whole piece of the crust moving. In the case of the Santa Monica Fault, the northern part moves up and over the southern part. You can cross that and build a tunnel that's built to accommodate the slip during the earthquake if you have in a pretty narrow zone. But if you try to build down the fault so the tunnel's actually running through this, you're going to be ripping it apart all the way through the tunnel. So what you've got to try and do is to put your tunnels at a high angle close to perpendicular to the faults and avoid ever putting a station in a fault. All of the locations on Santa Monica Boulevard are either in the Santa Monica Fault, or you move east and you end up in now what's been shown to be conclusively the northern end of the Newport-Inglewood Fault. And the data that was put together in this report is compelling for the location of active strands. That's another point. You don't have to worry about a fault if it hasn't moved in a long time. But this has clearly been shown to be an active feature that's capable of having an earthquake in the future. And therefore, you don't, really don't want to have a subway station in that location. By contrast, the sediments around the Constellation site are very level, and it's pretty conclusive that there isn't any active faulting going on in that location. For the further 2 points that we wanted to make about the report, they're on engineering issues, so I'm going to hand it to Dr. Jennings.
Thank you, Lucy. I'd like to first say, reiterate that the reports that you have are very well done professionally, and the staff that's assembled to assemble them is a high-quality staff. So that's one of the first things I always look for when I'm reviewing reports of this nature is who did them and what's their track record. And this, I tell you, these are first-class professionals. Davis, in the tunneling report specifically, they have assembled information and the capabilities of new technology that show convincingly that tunneling can be performed safely in the Century City area. The surface settlements will be small to negligible, and the information from experience, your experience, and from the proven capabilities, new technology show convincingly that tunneling can be done in gassy ground and in areas where there might be abandoned oil wells. And there's ample experience for and expertise for tunneling safely in seismic areas. You have done that. Specifically concerning the site, the Constellation site and the associated Beverly Hills High School site and associated sites with the Constellation station route, I think there's the evidence is convincing that you can confidently expect there'll be minimum settlement above the tunnel route and low to imperceptible vibrations and noise levels during construction and operation, and no significant impact on future construction of sites along the route, specifically the Beverly Hills site. And that concludes my comments.
This concludes the oral update on this subject. I'd like to thank you for your attention and call your attention to our next steps, which would have these subjects being reviewed and revisited by the board early next year when it's time to look at the final environmental reports and approve them. So at this point, we're happy to take questions from the
committee. Let me tell you what we're going to do at this point. Thank you very much. First, I want to thank all of the folks who so professionally gave us a report. I even understood it, and that's... Not always easy. I found it to be very comprehensive, and I thank you very much for that. A couple things. What I want to do is let the directors ask their questions, and we'll take public comment. And let me reiterate what Paul said. This is not a decision-making process. This is simply information gathering. And let's remember that as we go forward. Okay, can I finish?
Yeah, I'm just done.
Okay. One of the things that I want to clarify before there are any misstatements made, when you were hired to do the report, did anybody suggest a direction in which it might go? Anybody from the MTA or anybody else? Okay, I see everybody shaking their heads no. So I think it's important that we ask that question because this has been a kind of a tense situation, and I don't want anybody making accusations that things were done incorrectly. So, okay, having said that, I have a question from Director Antonovich.
What was the cost of this study, Mr. Lee or Mr. Taylor?
We'll have to get back to you on that. It's included within the project budget for the West Side Subway Extension, but we can get you that information.
We were told that today we could not have any documentation prior to the hearing, that we were going to have an oral report today. which I feel the process is very flawed and more like a professional wrestling match where you already know who the winner is before the match begins. The agency, being a public agency, has a responsibility to ensure that the members of a committee has information prior to the hearing instead of telling each member and the other members of the MTA board that there will be an oral presentation without documentation available. That is irresponsible. And I would like to know what process is going to be available for the school district to be able to have a similar presentation before this committee and before the board with the same equal to opportunity and time to put forth their point of view and their documentation, which they could provide and would provide to the committee prior to the committee hearing. Mr. Lay.
Thank you, Director. I appreciate the concern, and it has been our goal to make information available as soon as possible to the board and to the general public as soon as possible. Because of the constraints which govern the work which we've been undertaking the last months, we decided it would not be appropriate or prudent to share draft documents. In fact, we needed to complete the work, and that work is, in fact, ongoing. The report was distributed to the committee prior to the start of this meeting, momentarily before the start of this meeting. We have wanted to ensure that we make all the information available to all the board members at the same time so that there's nobody gaining favored status or an advantage over any other office. So the information is available now. If there's any member of the public who wants to see what was distributed to the board, we'd be happy to make that available to you. The panels that have just presented are available not only to answer questions now, but they're available to the media following the conclusion of this item on this committee. There is no recommendation today, no action today. I'm sure we can make the panel members available to individual board members if that's desired for individual briefings. And later on today, I hope sometime if we get it all assembled, the full document, which is, I'm told, is maybe 12 inches thick, will be available to all who are so interested. So I hope that's helpful.
Who made the decision that the committee members or other members of the MTA board would not have any type of information prior to today's hearing?
Well, nobody had prior information. There were no early distributions of reports. There were no early briefings as to the methodology, the finding, the conclusions of any of the panel work being done. I'm the CEO. That was my decision, and it was done for the reason I just outlined.
Why would you want to have committee members at a disadvantage as to asking questions of a project if they didn't have information prior to the hearing? And then after the presentation, we now are free to ask questions, which puts us at a handicapped position. And that's not really, as I said, it's more like a professional wrestling match than a deliberative agency where we're able to work from information to ask intelligent questions instead of just being an ink blotter to absorb and then move on to the next project. And that's why this agency has a responsibility to the school district and other interested parties. They have the equal amount of time as we've given this presentation today to hear their documentation and then have an ability for us to give thoughtful questions and make the deliberate decision on a project.
Madam Chair, I mean, I believe that the approach that we've taken is fully compatible with what you just outlined, Director Antonovich. There is no action item today. There is a period of a month, 2 months, 3 months with which to review the data and to probe and ask questions to gain commentary from outside organizations. So it was my view, that there was ample time, in fact, a great deal of time available to study, absorb, comment, agree, disagree with whatever the findings might be, and to ask questions of the experts who've prepared this work for us. So we've done that, I think, in the best of faith. We are now at a position where all the documents can be made available to all for their review, whether it's Beverly Hills or a journalist or any board office or any other office who may be curious about the project.
But you're giving it to us after the fact, not before the fact, and that's the question. Why are we allowed to have this body in a disadvantaged position? And you'd say you made that decision, but I would say that is an irresponsible decision. It should have been made by the this committee or should have been made by the MTA board as a whole, that that would be the process. But this process is flawed, and it's flawed from the beginning. And that's, I think, it's unethical and irresponsible.
One more comment, yes, and then I'm going to go on to other directors.
I would agree it was after the fact if there was an action required today. But there is no action required today, and there's no action required next month, and maybe not in December. So therefore, there is nothing after the fact because there is no action. The action is off, you know, several months into the future, again, allowing ample time for all the review which needs to occur.
Right, because I see it a little different than Supervisor Antonovich in that I don't see this as a public hearing on this. I see this as providing the context for the decisions that will lie ahead of us. So I appreciate, frankly, getting the context from the specialists here about the report. I know that the report's going to be coming out. We will have ample time to digest it. And this is not our only chance to ask questions. I view this as weather questions that are kind of bubbling up right now, tip of the iceberg kinds of questions. But over the next few weeks and months, as we and others are looking at closely at the detail information and getting, in fact, from all of us individually, may have our own source of experts and other input, we will put together our more specific lists of questions. And we're starting at the top, and we're going to be drilling down deeper and deeper and deeper and getting into the weeds. So I think we do have a process here that we can continue to be transparent, open, make sure that all the information is out there and that there's ample time for questions that we can get through this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have some actual questions about the report. But just as a comment, this is the first time we're seeing this report. It's not going to be the last time we're going to see this report. And I'm looking forward to seeing the 12 inches or whatever it is of detail that's going to come forward in the next few days. And we're all going to have an opportunity to review that. And I'm sure this committee and the full board are going to have extensive hearings on this in the context of the environmental impact document, because that's what this is. This is input to the environmental process. So I'm not at all troubled by the decision you made, Art, and as long as everybody got it at the same time, and I assume we all did. This is the first time I've seen this report, and all the press got it at the same time. Nobody got it leaked to them ahead of time, and so I think it's very important for the process to be fair, transparent, and show no favoritism. And I think this particular issue, we've had a bit of history of stuff that has been uneven in its release, and I think your sensitivity to that, if that's what your motivation was the right thing. Now, let me, first of all, I want to thank both teams of people. I have had the opportunity to meet with them over the last 6 months in a preliminary sense just to know what was going on. I had the same reaction, Richard, to Professor Dillon. I said if I had met him 40 years ago, I would have been a geology major, because he really got my intellectual juices flowing. And I'll assure you, he talks as fast when it's one-on-one as he does when he's before the committee. And I want to thank the peer review. The committee will remember that when this issue first arose, I had suggested at the full board that we have this kind of a review, and it's consistent with what we did in the subway extension to the San Fernando Valley, from Hollywood to the San Fernando Valley, when we hired Professor Eisenstein to do an analysis of the seismic issues, and I don't think there were so much seismic issues as settlement issues and those kinds of things going through the Hollywood Hills. And it was very useful because it put the science first. It set aside emotions and rhetoric and nonsense and focused on the science, because this has to be a decision when we make it that has to be based on science and facts, not based on what we feel or think based on our gut. This is a very expensive decision that we're going to make. It's a profound decision, both in terms of planning and in terms of finances. If we build a station in the wrong place, and 3 months after we build the station, we have an earthquake and the station is destroyed, and people are killed, we have an issue. And that was why we wanted to get an independent review, or at least a review. I then suggested to Mr. Leahy in the course of this that given the rhetoric, and I am the only member of this board who represents Beverly Hills, given the rhetoric that's been flowing freely out of Beverly Hills, that it would not be unreasonable to expect that people would say, well, you paid these guys to do this study. They probably did what you wanted them to do. And so I recommend it to you, and I appreciate the work you did to get the peer review panel together of highly respected, not that the original panel isn't highly respected, but the peer review is a people that the public knows and recognizes and should recognize. And I appreciate the time that they have spent on this, all four of you. With that, I have a few questions, just a few, because I don't want to go through all of this before I even figure out what the questions are, but there are a couple that came to mind. I don't remember which one of the panel members was talking. It may have been Professor Dillon. On the slide that was where you have all those red dashed red lines, and you found all of these, what do you call the red lines again? Strands, and you show no strands in the Century City area. Did you actually look in the Century City area on Avenue of the Stars or Century Park East?
We do have a transect along Avenue of the Stars extending through the proposed location, the Constellation Boulevard station, and it showed that sedimentary layers that are on the order of several hundred thousand years old are not broken by any faulting. So this indicates
so
to us...
You went down underground and tested it.
Did the same kind of studies along this transect right here, Avenue of the Stars. Here's the proposed station location. So we went through the proposed station location. These showed, again, that these strata, these sedimentary layers that are several hundred thousand years old in this area are unbroken by faulting. This demonstrates that there's no evidence for any active faulting in this area.
Okay. So you did the same kind of... Yes. Testing here that you did where you did find strands.
Correct.
Second question I had was you indicated on the Santa Monica Fault that the last time there was a quake or a significant movement associated with the fault was 3,000 years ago?
This comes from the study that we did on the VA property grounds just west of 405, just north of Santa Monica Boulevard. And there what we showed is that the scarp that you can see, same scarp that you see here, grew during an earthquake between 1,000 and 3,000 years ago.
Okay,
this is an active fault. Oh, yes, absolutely.
What is the demarcation between active and inactive? How far back do you have to go for it to be inactive?
The state uses 11,000 years, but that is a flexible number in the sense that if the geologist in charge can show that the fault has ruptured within the past few tens of thousands of years, that fault can be considered active by the state. Now, this is a basic issue because we're finding time and time again that we can have really significant damaging earthquakes that are generated by faults that have very, very long return times on the order of 10 or 11,000 years. So it's important to extend that boundary back a little bit.
There is no question in your mind that in the 3,000-year range, it is definitely active?
Correct.
Okay, so my layman's reaction to that, and the average person might ask the question and say something like, give me a break. It's been 3,000 years. It may be another 3,000 years before this thing moves again. The subway is going to be, if it's built in this area, will be, if it's built on Santa Monica Boulevard, well, it'll be dismantled and something new will be, and some new technology will be there sometime in the next 1,000 years, well, in 3,000 years. What's the big deal? Why not take the chance?
Yeah, geologists have kind of a weird sense of time. I've heard myself say something like, oh, yeah, those rocks are really young. They're only 10 or 15 million years old. So we have a geologic time is a very, very different sense of time. And this is a really important point that you're bringing up. Earthquakes don't typically recur on kind of our kind of human life timescales. That doesn't mean that we can disregard the risk associated with these things. It very may well be 3,000 years until we have an earthquake on the Santa Monica Fault. Then again, it could happen tomorrow. It depends on whether you're a betting person, I guess. And this is why we do something called probabilistic seismic hazard analysis. This factors in features such as how fast the fault stores up energy, what the size of earthquake it's likely to generate in the future based on previous earthquakes. All of these features, all of these factors indicate that it just, my own personal opinion, this is not a scientific fact, but it just doesn't seem prudent. Moreover, the state has these specific legal guidelines that if a fault has slipped in the past 11,000 years, it is considered active. And this has been active well within that time range.
And do all of you who are part of this team, including the peer review people, agree with that statement?
Yes. In fact, unfortunately, he couldn't be here because he's coming back from work in Portugal. But Professor Rockwell from San Diego State University, who's a world-renowned expert in this kind of analysis, was a co-author on the paper in which we found this recency of activity on the Santa Monica Fault.
Let me this is something that's debated any time you talk about earthquakes, and the state has had to consider this issue. And you can go longer than that. I mean, the magnitude 7 Hector Mine earthquake in 1999 was on a fault that hadn't moved in 100,000 years. And so but if you go more than that, probably you can, you know, it's harder to see it before then. That gives you a big range, and it's been debated, and the state has a combination of geologists and engineers and legal authorities. You look at it and say the decision was that this 10,000-year boundary is a prudent one, that, you know, you can't have it even farther back. Then you're starting to get to where it doesn't matter, but, you know, or maybe that it's worth the risk at a longer time, but anything less than 10,000 is essentially certain that it's active. That's the time frame over which faults behave, and then you're really certain that it's active. And yes, you can gamble, but that's not what we want to do with human lives when there's such an obvious consequence. And it's been decided on a lot of rounds, and it's used in a lot of different. Venues that the state has had to consider earthquake risk. That's become the accepted standard.
Okay, as long as you're up there, let me ask the two of you one last question, which was my last question. You talked about the sharp angle, the high angle business of the subway tunnel going through a fault at a high angle. High angle meaning
close to
a right
angle.
As perpendicular as you can get.
Yeah.
And so, again, layman here, what's the difference if I'm in a subway riding along the Santa Monica Boulevard route under the Santa Monica Fault, parallel to the fault? Why do I have a greater risk than if I'm in that same subway cutting across that fault when there's a seismic event going at it perpendicular?
Well, there's one simple geometry issue that when you're going perpendicular, you've got solely the width of your tunnel that's going to be intersecting the fault, whereas if you're ending up going down the fault, you might have a mile or more of the tunnel that's actually going to be ripped apart. And also, when you're at a high angle, it's not, you know, completely, you don't move 100 feet. You move a few feet, and you can build the tunnel to handle that level of offset. But when you're running down the fault, when you're essentially running in the fault zone, then you're going to continue to have motion through the whole thing. And a big issue is that you want to be able to fix your subway station and get it running again quickly. Right? You don't want to kill people during the event, and you want for the economic viability of our region to get it functioning again afterwards. So you don't want to, that's putting the station in it, you have people that sit there for a much longer time. You know, that earthquake doesn't happen very often. Your chances of having a train actually crossing that one little piece of the track at the moment at which the earthquake happened, is quite small. The chance that you're going to have people standing in the subway station at the time that the earthquake is happening is probably close to certain. Right? So you've got the different usage aspects, but also it's just how much of the, you need to get your station up and running again. You can build it to do that if it's not in the fault zone, and then you go and fix that one place where the track's been disrupted. You have a subway back up and running very quickly after the earthquake. If you've lost the whole station, you're not going to have that subway line for months or years.
Okay. Is it your testimony and your finding that, aside from the station, that you would, if we built the subway down Santa Monica Boulevard and had no station in Century City, that you wouldn't build it down Santa Monica Boulevard for the same reasons?
Correct.
Correct. I think we're in agreement on that.
And that's a big piece of it. To put it on Santa Monica Station, you have to run, you can't turn the tunnel as you come into the station, so you have to have a long stretch of essentially straight tunnel on either side of the station, and if you put it on Santa Monica Boulevard, then all of that is down the Santa Monica Fault
just
as well.
3 seconds, if I might interject. Santa Monica Boulevard is built where it is because they weren't stupid when they built that trolley line 110 years ago. They didn't want to excavate up and over the scarp. They went right along the base of the scarp. That's why Santa Monica Boulevard is where it is.
Just a minute. And what I want to ask the CEO is, when we have another presentation, if we can have these fine people back, because I know there will be other questions once we get into it. So
we'd be pleased to try to get that scheduled whenever okay. that time comes.
Because I think this is a very, very, very important decision. Extremely important. As you pointed out, we don't want to kill people because we put it in the wrong place. Director Katz?
Okay, well, with that lead in, you guys got it right. No, hope we get it right. Just two brief questions, and one goes back to what Dr. Jones had said earlier. So I guess, to some extent, Dr. Jones, how would you build a subway anywhere in Los Angeles? I mean, it seems to me, you know, given the report, given what we know exists here.
Well, there's about 100 faults. We're pretty sure where they are. There's the potential for unknown faults, but mostly that's because they don't make it to the surface. And what we aren't trying to avoid the earthquake, we're trying to avoid the fault coming to the surface and causing those offsets that happen on the fault. And we do have competent geologists that have spent quite a bit of time trying to understand what the structures are. And 100 sounds like a lot, and it's more than any other city in Los Angeles, in the country. But it's not that many when you look at how big Los Angeles is. And again, back to crossing them perpendicular and not putting your stations in them. Those are the two big things you want to do.
I appreciate that. And then the next question, and I'll be brief, I'm sure. The next question, it was mentioned during the testimony. I'm not sure who mentioned it, but you guys are closest right now. Deformations could occur during an earthquake, going back to the red lines, the squiggly lines that Zoe was talking about. When a deformation occurs, how wide an area does that cover? Does it impact, you know, big mess, little mess?
The answer is it can do both, and it can be dependent on a specific earthquake. Shown in red, if you want to look at this again, shown in red are individual fault strands that we've identified in this study, as I mentioned earlier. Any one of these could rupture in the next earthquake on the Santa Monica Fault. More than one could rupture. Moreover, in this particular fault, this is a very, very complicated fault. Not only does this side come up in an earthquake, that's why we see that hill along Santa Monica Boulevard, but this side also goes west, while that side goes east. So this is a very, very complicated, we're going to see very, very complicated deformations, very three-dimensional deformations within the Santa Monica Fault Zone. This is another issue. This is perhaps a question best directed to the engineers within the group. But what you're going to see is this is not a simple matter of, you know, if you put a station in here, you could see complicated ground deformations. Now, one area, so the pink is designed to show, encompass the entire area where we think we might see significant ground deformation in future earthquakes.
But and in that area, none of that stretches far enough to impact the Constellation Boulevard, is what I'm, is how I'm reading the map. That,
correct.
Correct.
Okay. All right. And how much of this last question, and just one more, how much of this was new faults?
That depends on what you mean by new fault. Okay.
Let me answer that.
New to us isn't the right word.
We've known that the Santa Monica Fault and the Newport Inglewood Fault are two of these big players. They're two of the 100. The exact location of them is new, and knowing that the Newport Inglewood Fault is active this far north is new, because Newport Inglewood's really obvious down in the south where it moved in 1933, But as you get north and north of the Baldwin Hills, you can no longer see it clearly at the surface. So it hasn't been marked as what's called an aqueous preola zone, as an active fault trace, because you can't see it at the surface. This study allowed for new information that confirms that it's farther north. That's, as a scientist, is very exciting.
And the fault that you identified, my guess is that depending on where you sit in this room, it's either exciting or not exciting, depending on, you know, depending on
exciting,
your...
Exciting, yes, which
but,
way?
But the question, when you found that the fault this far north, do you have any idea how far west or how far east it extends based on this research?
Yes, you can see it here. And again, the pink doesn't project very well, but this is the westernmost piece. This is the westernmost thing that might be an active fault strand, and even that's not completely definitive. These are definitive in this zone in here. So this width in here, these are active faults. We think that's an active fault, but there's nothing in this region in here.
And as active faults, what are the restrictions on building in that area?
Nothing until the state certifies it legally as an active fault.
Well,
once that you have to, so once that process happens, all pre-existing structures are grandfathered in, but you're not allowed to build any high occupancy structures or a housing development with more than 4 units. But that's only once it has been listed by the California Geological Survey. And this part of the Newport Inglewood is not included in that at this point because we couldn't see it clearly at the surface.
And so it's up to them then to take it up on their own, of course.
Right.
If I was sitting here as a decision maker, having been given this information, the idea of going ahead with it, even though it has not been cited specifically by the state, seems to me somewhat of a lawyer's, you know, I don't want to use that word, a lawyer's payday.
401.
Pay, 401 pay.
Yeah.
Because we now have knowledge.
Right. And I would, I'm strongly encouraging them to make sure it gets fully published in the scientific literature, but it's also going to be brought to the attention of the California Geological Survey.
Thank you.
Again, thank all of you so very much, and we look forward to seeing you back here again. I hope we can work that out.
Can I ask one more question before? No, just either one of you? What are the implications of the findings you've made on the Newport Inglewood for the school's construction plans? I mean, it's kind of the same question that Richard asked, but I want to be more specific.
Legally, there is nothing until the state acts on it, and it's a process that takes a very long time to get an active fault zone added. One would hope that the school takes this into account as they build it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll go to public comment. Denny Zane, to be followed by Paul 11. Paul 11, to be followed. Okay, thank you. Maria Elena Durazo. Priscilla Chang.
Good afternoon. My name is Priscilla Chang, and I'm here on behalf of Maria Elena Durazo and the Los Angeles County Federation of Labor. I'm here to reiterate how critical it is that we move forward on this project. We're able to do this because of the tremendous investment of voters of Los Angeles County made with the passage of Measure R speaks to the critical need to create an efficient and connected public transit system. But voters understood that Measure R was not just about being able to ride the bus or train. It was about putting people back to work in good jobs, building and improving our infrastructure. The Wilshire Subway is an essential piece of the great challenge and responsibility you have to the residents of Los Angeles. The challenge you have is to serve the interests and needs of every community in our region. We need to create a system that gets people to work, to the park, or to the local store. And most importantly, we need to get our economy back on track. The beauty is that when it's completed, the subway will serve everyone. This is the vision of LA, and we need to get it moving. Thank you.
Robbie Hunter.
Good morning.
Robbie Hunter, Los Angeles, Orange County Building Trades. We represent 140,000 construction workers. We're looking forward to this subway moving forward. It will give a mass transit system so when our men in East L.A. are working in Santa Monica, we'll have an opportunity at transit. We'd absolutely like it to be the safest possible. We're glad that you're doing the research you're doing. We're glad that you're doing the work you're doing. Our guys will be done in those holes working for years. We're excited about the opportunity about putting people to work and having a more efficient transit system for all the residents of California and Los Angeles. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Denny Zane, I understand you're back in the room.
Bad timing. Back again. Thank you very much. I couldn't agree with Supervisor Yaroslavsky more when he said that the key thing here is that the public must have confidence that decisions here are made on the merits of the issue, and that when the science is clear, the science prevails, and that all communities are really treated equally with respect to that principle. Major projects like this, any major project of in light rail or subway, is going to have issues with communities. I know in my neighborhood, the maintenance facility for the exposition line right across the street from me presented an issue. And when the exposition authority addressed it reasonably, responsibly, and on the merits, it really assuaged the concerns and reduced the alarm in my neighborhood. And that's the approach I think you need to take here, that when the merits prevail, when the science is clear and you adhere to that, the public will have confidence in your decision-making and will support you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next item on the agenda is item number 5.
Good afternoon, members of the board. I'm David Yale, Deputy Executive Officer for Regional Programming. This item is the approval of the 2012 Los Angeles County nomination to the State Transportation Improvement Program. We are recommending the programming of $147.7 million to the project shown in the attachment. We are also recommending that we seek an advance of a future county share of up to $102 million, though it is unlikely that we will receive those funds. In order to receive them, another county must leave funds on the table for us to get the advance. And the third recommendation is to deprogram the Arborvita 405 interchange project, which recently was determined to have a no-build finding in the environmental work, so the project is a no-go, and we are recommending that those funds be reprogrammed to the Crenshaw-LAX corridor. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about the action.
Questions from the directors? Do we have any public input? Okay. Moved and seconded. Any objections? So ordered.
Thank you.
Six, bus rapid transit corridors.
I'm Brad McAllister, Executive Officer of Long Range Planning. Item 6 responds to the Mayor's motion of August 11th to report back to the Board identifying a minimum of 5 corridors for bus rapid transit, including dedicated bus lanes. We're seeking your recommendation of a strategy to move forward. We're recommending conducting a study looking at potential BRT corridors, including dedicated bus lanes, as well as perhaps some lower-level bus speed improvements and looking at pedestrian and street improvements. Building on a study that we did about a year ago, we actually looked at bus rapid transit improvements that were less than BRT, but it's using a similar process to what was outlined in the mayor's motion. We were planning on doing a study this year to go more into detail into some of the top performing lines. Instead, we're recommending taking those funds that are already in our budget and looking at potential corridors. In the board report in Attachment A, we have identified some potential corridors. Seven of those come from the bus speed improvement study we did a year ago, but we also are looking at five new corridors where service is currently provided, and an additional four corridors where there's actually no bus service. We believe this would be a good starting point for the consultant. We'll reactivate an advisory committee that we had as part of the first phase study. We anticipate to be able to come back to the board a year from now. It's a nine-month study. Once we go through the procurement process, we believe that'll be about a year. And that concludes staff's report.
Questions from the directors? I do have some public input. Gerard Wright, Kimberly Richards, and Sun Yang Yang. In that order, please.
Good afternoon, directors. Thank you, Madam Chair. Gerard Wright, Westside Central Service Council member. I'm glad to see that Venice Boulevard corridor is on there. It's a very busy corridor for the West Side, and it's one that travels and carries a lot of passengers who travel long distances. There is one small minor point, at least with the 405 freeway corridor study, which is a great opportunity for it, but also other corridors that connect that pass to the valley, and I think Ms. Richards will highlight on that, is not included in that study, and it's a busy corridor that has speed improvement issues and needs to have the study address those concerns. So I'm glad to see this is moving forward, and would like to hear more about this in the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, directors. Kimberly Richards, Chair of the Metro San Fernando Valley Service Council. Building on something Mr. Wright just touched upon, the Van Nuys Boulevard corridor and the Sepulveda Pass have been specifically excluded from this study by staff for reasons that on the surface make sense, but if you dig down a little deeper, they may not make as much sense. Even though the Van Nuys Boulevard corridor is subject to its own analysis now, there are a lot of things that could be considered. Oh, I don't know. You might find a symbiotic relationship between this study and that study. You might find a symbiotic relationship between this study and the proposed Measure R Sepulveda Pass program. Mr. Wright and I have spent a lot of time with staff working on ways to improve the connectivity between the Van Nuys Central Business District and the West Side, and I fear that having this study exclude them may hinder our ability to improve service for our customers in the interim.
Thank you. Sun Yang Yang.
Good afternoon, Planning and Program Committee. I'm here, Sun Yang Yang, a representative of the Bus Riders Union, here today to support this motion. And I'm glad that this project is finally moving along with the county-wide bus speed improvement project, which actually came out of a motion in 2006 with Supervisor Gloria Molina on coming up with a county-wide bus-only lane program. I'm glad that this is finally moving forward and that I encourage the staff and the MTA to continue on the community outreach process. I know that the Technical Advisory Committee involved a lot of different stakeholders, including groups like Coalition for Clean Air and us, and we hope that many of the organizations that participated in the Wilshire Bus Only Lane campaign project could also be included in that community process. Thank you.
Any questions? Motion?
Move it.
Moved and seconded. No objections, so ordered. Item 7 has been withdrawn. We go to item 8.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Item 8 is an item to award a firm fixed price contract to number PS4710-2744 to CH2M Hill, Inc. in the amount of $3,140,000 for professional services. This is associated with the 710 South project and is a part of working through the TAC there. They'd like us to identify early action projects, particularly focusing on sound walls. So this is a contract to identify potential early sound walls that could be built in that corridor as a part of the greater 710 freight corridor project. So we'd ask the board to authorize the award of this contract and let the CO execute, well, and to also execute up to some contract modifications up to a cumulative value of 15%.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Richard.
Katz.
Doug, why it seems to me that this is duplicative of what we do internally or what Caltrans does. What are we doing here, or what am I missing?
Yeah, we have a number of potential locations identified where we know that sound walls should be needed as a part of a future project. The question is, within existing right-of-way we own today, not right-of-way we're going to buy in the future, can we get in and do some early mitigation for these folks, areas that we know need sound walls irrespective of what we do? The 710 projects specifically identified a corridor of early mitigation projects. These are potential early mitigation projects that are very necessary. So we're going to focus on buildability and constructability that meets that future need when we fund that future project. Can we do it today and get this in using this pot of funds? So there's a greater level of engineering to see if we can really do this one. We know the need's there. Can we actually build it? The pot of funds is the identified Measure R funds for the 710 corridor, which is the 710 freight corridor and early action projects is the description. So it comes strictly out of that Measure R 710 South pot.
So it's in the highway?
It's in the highway category, correct.
And it's $3.4 million for a feasibility?
Yeah, it's a very complex area. We won't use more than we need to, but we're going to do a high level of engineering in a few of these to, because there are some tight areas, and there are some areas that are going to be very complex. So we're anticipating some big needs. It's a long corridor.
How much is it going to cost to actually build a sound wall if it's $3.5 million to study the feasibility of it?
Won't know till we're done. Last time we were doing sound walls, Frank, we were running on the order of $3 or $4 million a mile to actually construct a sound wall. Some of the ones we're looking at here, I'm linking specifically like the Thunderbird Village area. There's retaining walls involved, so it's a very industrial corridor, and it's going to be difficult. These will be on the high end of cost.
You would build a sound wall in an industrial corridor?
I won't build a sound wall in an industrial corridor. I'll build a sound wall at a residential area that's tucked in the middle of an industrial corridor.
And there are such areas down here?
And there are such areas.
That abut the freeway?
That abut the freeway.
You have industrial on either side of them? Is that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Second.
Motion seconded. Any objections?
Yes, this contract was competitively let. There were six firms.
Item number 9.
Good afternoon, Directors. Martha Wellborn, Planning Group. For item 9, we are seeking your approval of the guidelines and lapsing policy of the new Transit-Oriented Development Grant Program. We are not here today to ask you to approve any grants, just to consider the guidelines. The fiscal year 12 budget included an amount of $5 million to assist local cities in TOD, in studying TOD districts near the new stations that will be built through Measure R. Last July, the board reviewed an outline of the program guidelines, and today we're asking you to approve the fully fleshed-out guidelines and the lapsing policy. One of our basic assumptions is that future fiscal years will also include funds for this program, and based on that, we have structured the program to target the cities located along the first few Measure R projects in the order that those projects will be built. So for this year, we are proposing to include those cities along the Gold Line Foothill Extension, Expo 1 and 2, and the Crenshaw Corridor. I could go through the list of cities, but I think you know roughly what they are. And another primary goal of the program is to assist these cities in removing regulatory obstacles to creating transit-oriented development, as opposed to just doing design studies.
Moved. Is there a second?
Speak to a motion, please, to add to that. Right. So I think hopefully you have that in front of you. And basically, the board's been presented with grant program here to assist cities with the development of necessary land use and regulatory environments. Again, this is to facilitate transit-oriented districts. So the first year, $5 million grant program has been limited to cities located along the Crenshaw LAX, Foothill Extension, and Expo Phase 2 light rail corridors. The next of fixed guideway corridors has entered into or will be entering the planning phases, and the cities should commence planning efforts concurrent with design. Additionally, there are cities that are developing transit-oriented district strategies to enhance MetroLink ridership. Therefore, we request that the staff identify an additional $1 million in appropriate funds and develop appropriate guidelines, again, coming back to the board for approval, to assist Los Angeles County cities along the Metro Green Line extension, West Santa Ana Branch, and MetroLink lines in creating transit-oriented ordinances, parking overlays, and specific plans. And additionally, I would hope that under the section that in Attachment A under Project Objectives, where we mention further the reduction in greenhouse gases through encouraging infill development along transit corridors, that we would add the bullet point, support and implement sustainable development principles. That kind of ties into that. So that would be our suggestion to amend it.
So it would be as
I would move it that way.
As part of the motion to approve the recommendation.
Right. Yes. And then okay. The objective language that's in the objectives. That language.
Okay. Moved. Seconded. Any objections? Okay. I'm sorry. I apologize. I did have. Is it Isela Gracian? I am so sorry. I did have your paper here. So we'll listen anyway.
It's actually in support of this. So I'm Isela Gracian with the Isela Community Corporation, and I'm here on behalf of the Alliance for Community Transit Los Angeles, or ACT LA. And we are encouraged by Metro's step towards future planning for development and the guidelines that support jurisdictions to plan and adjust for transit-oriented development. But we also are working to ensure that low-income communities of color are able to receive the full potential benefit of transit-oriented development while eliminating the potential negative impacts of that. So we are asking Metro staff, as working on these guidelines, to look at inclusions of affordable housing and how to provide tools to these different jurisdictions to be able to do that, as well as deepening the community engagement that's true, that informs residents so that they can actively participate in the process and be able to work from a point of vision and not just present something that they can react to, but really be a part of. So we're here supporting this, and we're really looking forward to Metro being able to use this critical window of time to turn the city and county's future towards when we're transportation and development work together.
Thank you so much. And since it was in favor, I see no need to even reconsidering. So let's move on to item number 10.
Good afternoon. I'm Nelia Custodio of the Joint Development Program, and I'm presenting for Roger Moliere. We're here today to seek authority for our CEO to enter into an exclusive negotiating agreement with a development entity created by JSM Corporation and Polis Builders to develop a predominantly retail mixed-use project on two MTA-owned parcels located at Cesar Chavez and Soto Streets. The project will be anchored by a CVS pharmacy and include approximately 70 square feet of retail and a 10 to 15 unit affordable apartment building. As you would recall, the project site includes two of four parcels purchased by the MTA for the Metro Red Line East Side Extension. A rescoping of the East Side Extension moved the station to its current location at First and Soto Streets. The other two parcels, located between Matthews and Fickett, will be developed as a predominantly residential mixed-use project of approximately 72 affordable housing units by McCormick Barron Salazar.
I have lots of public comment. Are there any questions from the Members of the board? Thank you. Gloria Gutierrez, to be followed by Caridad Vasquez.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Gloria Gutierrez, and I'm the outreach specialist of East LA Community Corporation and a resident of Boyle Heights for 20 years. The residents of Boyle Heights have worked on the Boyle Heights Community Plan since 2006. The Boyle Heights Community Plan is a vision of what the residents want to preserve in the community and what they would like to see and not see in the community when the development happens in Boyle Heights. The residents talk specifically on the site of Cesar Chavez and Soto Street in the Boyle Heights Community Plan. One major concern residents have about the specific area is the potential loss of character and culture of the neighborhood as a result of the development. We want to maintain current businesses, murals, street vending space, create more affordable housing for extremely low and very low income residents, not just 10 to 15 units. Opportunities for local businesses with targeted hire of Boyle Heights residents, not a CVS. The JSM plan is the complete opposite of what the community residents envisioned for the area, and I encourage you to not extend exclusive negotiation with JSM because they have not had a community-driven or community involvement process. Thank you.
Caridad, to be followed by Leticia Andrade.
Hola, mi nombre es Caridad Vasquez. Soy residente de La Boyle Heights.
Interpreter, please. I'm sorry.
Hi, my name is Caridad Vasquez.
Soy residente de La Boyle Heights.
I resident from
Boyle Heights.
Boyle Heights.
Y tengo 17 años viviendo ahí.
I've been living there for 17 years.
Mi pregunta es esta, que no estamos de acuerdo sobre el proyecto que están haciendo sobre nuestra comunidad.
We don't agree with the project that's going on in our community.
Porque habemos más gente necesitada. Soy representante de unos vendedores ambulantes.
Because there's a lot of people in need. I represent a lot of immigrant sales people.
Y necesitamos que nos tomen en cuenta porque últimamente hemos tenido problemas porque andamos vendiendo en la calle.
And we need to be addressed because we've had problems when we've been out selling in the streets.
Y ya que van a hacer ese proyecto, queremos que nos den algo positivo para seguir viviendo y vendiendo y no ser molestado por las autoridades de la policía.
Okay, and as long as that project is going to move forward, we'd like to have something that can guarantee that we can continue selling and we won't be bothered by the authorities or the police.
Porque somos como 20 vendedores y últimamente hemos sido acusados porque no tenemos trabajo y nuestra familia depende de nosotros.
Because we're around 20 vendors and lately we've been harassed because we don't have papers and we have to feed our families.
Yo creo que todo lo que les estoy comunicando no estamos ajenos porque se ha estado comunicando durante 3 años nuestro problema.
I think what I'm communicating here to you is not alien to you because we've had this problem for 3 years.
Y queremos que ya que están haciendo algo positivo para nosotros porque nosotros somos una comunidad latina y no queremos que nuestra cultura se pierda.
And I'd like you to do something positive for us because we are a Latin community and we don't want to lose our community.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much.
Leticia, be followed by Teresa Soto.
Buenos días, mi nombre es Leticia Andrade, residente de Boyle Heights por más de 20 años.
Leticia Andrade, resident in Boyle Heights for
más de 20 años.
Over 20 years.
Sí. En la última reunión que tuvimos con GSM,
and the last reunion we had with GSM,
las cosas que la comunidad pidió eran diferentes a las que se presentan ahora.
The things that the community asked for are very different from the things today.
En la comunidad queremos viviendas económicas de acuerdo a la al ingreso que tienen Boyle Heights.
Okay, in the community we need places to live that are according to the wages in Boyle Heights.
Sí. Ajá. Queremos vivienda económica y queremos trabajos para los residentes locales.
We need more employment for our local residents.
Con salarios dignos.
With dignified salaries.
Sí, y queremos que el proceso, que no haya negociación exclusiva con GSM solamente, queremos que sea un proceso abierto a la comunidad.
We don't want an exclusive negotiation with GSM. We just want it to be it open with our community.
Sí, que sea un proceso justo, transparente y exigimos que en esta negociación sea inclusiva la comunidad. y sus opiniones.
Okay, we just want a fair, open communication,
que sea la comunidad inclusiva en esta negociación, que sean tomada en cuenta.
And the community be included in this negotiation.
Sí, muchas gracias.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Teresa Soto, to be followed by Petra Rivera.
Buenos días. Mi nombre es Teresa Soto. Soy residente de Boyle Heights.
Resident Boyle Heights.
Y miembro activa de East LA Community Corporation.
And active member of East LA Community Corporation.
El motivo, el mensaje para ustedes es la preocupación de que en mi comunidad.
My motive here is that I'm worried about my community.
Nunca ha sido escuchada cuando vienen cambios.
For not being heard whenever there's changes.
Cuando vienen cambios a nuestras comunidades.
When there's changes coming towards our community.
O compañías o corporaciones.
Or companies or corporations.
Nunca nos dan el respeto que merecemos.
We never get the respect that we deserve.
Cuando vienen y nos traen trabajos no son suficientes.
When they come and bring us employment, it's not enough.
Debido a nuestras necesidades.
According to our needs.
Que no cubren las necesidades por lo cual queremos participar.
And they don't cover the needs that from which we want to participate.
Y tener diálogo con ustedes.
And have a dialogue with you.
Que nos den el respeto que merecemos.
And order the respect that we deserve.
Estoy contra el desarrollo.
I am against
the GSM.
Okay, I'm against the improvements of GSM.
En el pasado nos hemos juntado con ellos.
In the past we've united with them.
Y no hemos visto ningún cambio.
And we have not seen any change.
Ellos siguen con los mismos planes.
They continue with the same plans.
En los cuales no estamos de acuerdo.
In which we are not agreeing with.
Gracias por su atención.
Thank you for your attention.
Petra Rivera, to be followed by Margarita Serafa.
Buenas tardes, mi nombre es Petra Rivera. Soy miembro de ILAC y residente de Boyle Heights por 35 años.
I am a member of ILAC and resident of Boyle Heights for 35 years.
A la comunidad le hace falta fondos para pagar renta cara.
Okay, the community needs funds to pay high rent.
Hay necesidad de la vivienda económica para la gente de muy bajos recursos.
There's need for low income rent for people with.
Estoy en contra del desarrollo de GSM porque no hay suficiente vivienda económica para gente de muy bajos recursos.
Okay, I'm against the GSM and their projects because there's no housing for people of low income.
En el pasado hemos tenido diálogo con GSM, pero ahora no nos toman en cuenta.
We've had dialogue with GSM in the past, but now they don't take it to account.
Queremos un proceso que incluya a la comunidad de Boyle Heights. Gracias.
We want a process that will take notice of us in Boyle Heights.
Beta, to be followed by Joaquin Maria.
Buenas tardes.
Good afternoon.
Mi nombre es Margarita Serpa. Soy miembro de ILAC por 6 años.
I am a member of ILAC for 6 years.
Y resido en el este de Los Ángeles por 32 años.
And I reside in Boyle Heights for 32 years.
El problema es que necesitamos más vivienda económica.
The thing is we need more affordable housing.
De bajos recursos.
Same thing.
No si veis, porque ya tenemos farmacias.
Okay, no.
CVAs.
CVS, because we have pharmacies.
Ajá. Quiero ver más viviendas económicas extremadamente.
I would like to see more
de bajo recursos.
Low funding housing.
Y espacios para vendedores ambulantes.
And more space for vendors.
Queremos que nos apoye Metro. Muchas gracias.
I want Metro to support us. Thank you very much.
Juan Madrid. I'm sorry, Juan Joaquin Maria to be followed by Lauren Kwan Madrid. Joaquin's not here. Lauren to be followed by Reina Fukuda.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Lauren Kwan Madrid. I'm a lifelong resident of Boyle Heights on the 2500 block of Cincinnati Street, directly around the corner from this proposed site. I also work for East LA Community Corporation as assistant project manager in the Affordable Housing Development Department. As a community member and lifelong resident, we were never notified of this development, of this proposed development. My question is, why is it that in a neighborhood that is 80% renter occupied, like Boyle Heights, that we are the last to know about developments going on around us? This is yet again another example of unaccountable development practices in our city, where local residents are the last to know. I also want to point out that this proposal is not in concurrence with the goal stated here to promote and enhance transit ridership and to reduce auto use and congestion through TransitLink development. Additionally, as an affordable housing advocate, 10 to 15 units is simply not enough. My neighbors struggle to pay their rent on a weekly basis. Teenagers have to work to pay rent. 10 to 15 units on a 1.95-acre site is not enough. On that 13,000-acre site, you can fit at least 48 units of affordable housing. Thank you.
Tudor to be followed by Sun Yong Yang.
Good afternoon, Planning and Programming Committee. My name is Reina Fukuda, and I'm a community organizer at the East LA Community Corporation. And I'm here today on behalf of our ELAC members as well as our ally organizations that make up about more than 37,000 people in Boyle Heights in the east side. And we urge your committee not to approve the six-month ENA with Cesar Chavez Soto LLC or any other development entity created by JSM Capital LLC, because instead we ask the committee to commit to a community-driven process of adopting development guidelines first and before moving forward with the ENA of the Cesar Chavez and Soto. And by implementing a robust community engagement process, we can move forward with a development proposal that actually meets the community needs and serves as a model of accountable development. We have two main concerns. JSM Capital LLC has not communicated with us, Boyle Heights community, since August 19th, 2010.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sun Yong Yang.
Good afternoon, Sun Yong Yang with the Bus Riders Union. We are here standing firm and supporting the East LA Community Corporation and the community and residents of Boyle Heights in urging the MTA Planning and Program Committee to reject this motion. Specifically, JSM has not been a firm that has been responsive to the community for over a year, and we think that community engagement is a very critical part of development. MTA cannot be continue to promote irresponsible development that drives out the very transit riders that support your system. So I encourage that there is push the developers and all those who are engaged to allow community engagement and make sure that these public lands are decided upon by the public and not by just backdoor negotiations with developers and the agency. Thank you.
All of the public input I have a couple of questions. First, I understand there are two pieces of property. We're just focusing on one now, but there's another one adjacent to it.
There are actually a total of four parcels in that area. Let me backtrack a little bit. In 2006, the board approved our CEO to enter into a JDA for a total project that would develop about 90 to 100 affordable housing units in all four parcels. The JDA was entered into, but the development was not implemented because of the economy. In 2009, this group of developers reassessed the feasibility of the project and came up with two different but complementary projects. The first project would be on the west side, on Chavez and Soto, and this would be the predominantly retail use. And the other project to be implemented by McCormick Barron Salazar is a predominantly residential use. That residential component will yield about 72 affordable housing units.
Okay, the only thing I want to make sure of is that you work together and make sure that they're compatible.
Yeah. That's the second point I'm going to make, that we are working very closely with the council office. Secondly, we're not seeking the board approval for this project.
Right.
We're seeking authority for the exclusive negotiating agreement so that the developer can do its due diligence. It will take a year of public process for the developer to acquire entitlements to build a CVS. So there's plenty of opportunity for the community to provide input to the developers.
Yeah, that was my concern. That
yes, we're working very closely.
About planning. It's a planning agreement, and I just want to make sure that we're planning the whole area, not just one piece of it. So you've answered
and this
that.
Is a 6 to 18 month exclusive negotiating period, and there's plenty of time for us to make adjustments, to consider community input, and to reassess the viability of the project.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Right. So while there's plenty of time, there will be community outreach that goes
There on. Will be a community outreach.
Motion?
Move it.
Second? No objections, so ordered. I'm going to ask to go out. I think just about everything else is received and filed except for item 62, which is you should have a copy of. Let me state first that my interest in this and others, I'm sure, is not to do any part of the long-range transportation plan. I received a document, project budget and schedule status, regarding light rail. It was very helpful to me because it sets things out. So my concern is that we have easy documentation to work with. In the past, we've had an SRTP. It just sets out a five-year snapshot that prioritizes our needs and allocates available resources. And I would find that, and I think others would, very helpful, too. Sometimes I get lost in the minutiae. Would provide the board with a framework for decision-making by giving us financial context and potential impact from recommendations, identifying the costs, defining them. It's a five-year baseline for decision-making. It's not meant in any way to change what we're doing, just to report what we're doing. So I move that we direct the CEO to report back to the board no later than 90 days with a short-range transportation plan for board consideration. It should examine the following, but not be limited to status of Measure R and other major project initiatives, state of good repair, review of industry practices and FTA best practices on rehabilitation, revised five-year cash flow outlook, revised federal assumptions, TIP, Transportation Improvement Program viability, status of new starts assumptions and federal assumptions, and operations and maintenance funding plan. And then the CEO could return to the board with any policy recommendations or changes. Okay. Did you have a question?
I was going to talk a little bit about it.
Okay.
Looking at it, as you know, it's a five-year plan. Our last one is from 2003, so it does seem clear that we need to be starting on the next iteration of a short-term plan. But it did take a year to do a short-term plan. It's still a technical document. It's not done, I think, over 2 or 3 months, and maybe staff can correct me if I'm wrong on that. While I'm supportive of let's get a start on the new SRTP, I think we need to get more information and give thoughtful consideration to what is that timing? You know, what can we realistically expect? And again, not to have them draw it out, but to realistically expect both in terms of the process of what needs to be done and what the time points would be, but also to understand it in the context of the regional transportation plan. Because right now, SCAG is poised to release the draft of the regional transportation plan with the sustainable communities strategy this time. That happens every 4 years. So the 191 cities, the six counties, the six county transportation commissions have been working with SCAG on what is a highly technical document that also has to deal with reaching and meeting air conformity for the region. If we don't reach that, federal and state government can hold back funds for every project, for highway projects, for transit projects. So we need to understand, and that's why my hesitation of saying we're going to have a short-range transportation plan in January with the possibility then of adopting it before April, is we need to fit this into the cycle with SCAG. With the RTP. Now, I think bringing it up is good because it is saying, it has pointed out, we're by feeding into the current RTP, we're not going to get a new short-range plan into it. But when do we start it and what the timing is? But also to be careful that we're not suddenly putting out a new plan that, and again, I don't think it's going to be done in 2.5 months during a holiday season. But we need to think about this. We need to think about it also. How does it relate to the TIP? How does it relate to the transportation, TCM projects? So it's complicated. So let's get that information, and maybe we can even get that for the board meeting, but I just hesitate to put a specific timeline on it.
Well, and it seems to me once you have the document, if you keep it updated, then it doesn't become a big problem. And it was done 5 years ago or longer ago. I'm sorry. It was done another time, and then it was not continued. So here's an opportunity, or if you will, to start the process again. If 90 days is too aggressive, then it certainly can be.
Support starting the process. I just think how does it, we can need to get more information, how it fits in, how it. Or the baseline motion? Okay, then we'll vote on it.
Okay.
Within 90 days.
What's
90 days?
Is 90 days with the items that were mentioned. Pardon me? Oh, okay. That we direct the CEO to report back to the board no later than 90 days with a short-range transportation plan for board consideration.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just to explain a little bit, we've gone back and reviewed the schedule that it took to do the 2003 short-range transportation plan, and it was an 18-month process. There are a lot of steps that are involved in the short-range transportation plan that are beyond the bulleted items in the motion, including demand modeling, including financial modeling. And we would be happy to come back with more information and set up a schedule, understand the issues that you're raising. But we would be able to provide a status on some of the bullet points, but we would not be able to do a short-range plan in 90 days. So just wanted you to have that information before you make your vote.
All right. And
Madam Chair, perhaps it would be good if staff reports back in 90 days, it would actually be the January board meeting. On issues as relates to the short-range plan and begin to outline that discussion for the board.
Director Antonovich, you were the second, or do you was that, does that meet with your approval? Yes, okay, so you report back within 90 days.
Yes, right, and that would be on.
And that's reasonable. Right. I don't have a problem.
And by the way,
we need to know it,
right.
Because I'm picking up the phone and saying to Karen, what's happening here? And wait a minute, let me find out. So. Please be my resource.
And it has been a while since we've done it. The current one has expired, and so we'll come back with more information for you.
And my last comments, and I'm not opposed to an expedited process, but I think we do have to work with our partners at SCAG and respect understand that process and not put ourselves in a position that could harm us.
Absolutely. So the motion is that we report back in 90 days with a report back how long it would take it to do it. Never mind.
And they might be able to answer some of the questions.
Yeah.
Okay. So did we get a 90-day report back? Was that what was on there?
Yeah, we'll report back on issues associated with an update to the plan.
So if there are no objections, that will be the order. I missed something. I'm sorry. Item 15, State Route 126, Commerce Center Drive Interchange Improvement Update. And thank you for listening to me.
Brad.
Thank you for listening. Sorry.
You weren't listening when you were being thanked.
Right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 15 is actually an item we brought to you and was approved in May, but that report indicated that the agreement would be identical to a prior agreement on the Hasley Canyon project. This agreement is different.
Second.
Thank you.
So ordered. Any objections? So ordered. You have your agreement.
Thank you.
We have left. 11. Where are we? I know. That's why I want to get them through. Item number 11, post-1989 retrofit sound wall program. It's a receive and file.
Madam Chair, we're moving forward sound walls. There's a project, units 6 and 8 have going to get notice to award those contracts today. Units 5 and 7 are in the goal evaluation process. The low bidder didn't appear to meet our small business goal, so we're seeing if he made a good faith effort, and we're moving forward with design on 10 and 11 to expedite those.
No objection, so ordered.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Item number 12.
And item number 12, again, you have the written report. The bids are open on the first project, the truck lanes from 514 interchange to Pico Lyons. We're looking forward to awarding that to the low bidder. We got great bids, good bid participation.
Moved by Antonovich, second by Katz. No objection, so ordered. Item number 13.
Item number 13 is the 138 capacity enhancements. We continue to make great progress in the high desert on these projects. There are two STIP projects we've worked closely with Caltrans on. We're ready for bids to open on those. Those bids to advertise in November, December. We're looking forward to a May start of construction date on those projects.
Moved by O'Connor, seconded by Antonovich. No objections, so ordered.
And the last one is the receive and file on the Interstate 5 high-occupancy vehicle lane project. Four of the five projects in that segment are currently under construction. That fifth segment is a very important. It's CMIA-funded. We're tracking it equally like we are I-5 South. We're working great with Caltrans to get that project out. We anticipate being able to advertise, get a vote on that project next spring, and go to construction late next summer. So that project is progressing well as well.
Thank you. Moved by Antonovich, second by Katz. No objections. So ordered. Are we done?
Yes, both with me, ma'am.
16, sorry. Regional rail. Run.
I'm running. I'm going to make it very brief for you. I will not show the PowerPoint, just cut through to the high points here, just in the nature of time. I will say this, High Speed Rail is moving forward on their business plan, which is the long-awaited business plan that's due on the 1st. We had a meeting up there on Monday with them discussing a chapter in the business plan. It appears that they're headed in the right direction. We'll know more when it comes out. And so we are still talking with them about opportunities for advanced investment in Southern California. As you know, they've been putting all their eggs in one basket in the Central Valley, and we're pushing them to give us some advanced work. The I-5 Grapevine study will be released in November after the business plan. They'll probably actually release it more towards December to after the dust settles from the business plan. It appears that they're going to recommend further study on this. Apparently, they've got a $4 billion cost savings and on the Antelope Valley study. I still don't believe it's an apples-to-apples comparison, so we'll keep you informed on that. The LOSAN CEOs are moving forward with governance, and also a team is working on legislation to advance that process forward. As you know, the board has supported moving forward with the local governance, as has the LOSAN board. That action is moving forward very quickly. Antelope Valley study is on track right now. We are moving forward with it as we speak. We've got a consultant on board. We get the signed Form 60 is in transit, and Metrolink's consultant is on board as well, or moving closely to on board. So we're moving forward. We're going to have a kickoff meeting in the next week on that. Next steps, we're actually going to have a high rail study tour of the line. We're going to take the entire team out there to view the line, kind of pick up some high points, kick off, and do there. And
actually deal with some of the scheduling issues. They are still on track for a schedule or a draft report for us in January, so we can start preparing for a presentation to you at the board. We did receive a successful grant application for ARRA funding for a siding double-track project in the San Fernando Valley on the Ventura Line, the Los Angeles Corridor. This actually solves a significant bottleneck for us in Southern California. This is going to look at double-tracking from C.P. Raymer to Burnson, basically from Van Nuys all the way out into Chatsworth, and basically close the loop. This will give us double-tracking from the Los Angeles County border at Ventura all the way through to Orange County. Significant action on that. We have the signed grant from the USDOT, the FRA, and also part of that is a second track platform basically at the Van Nuys station, and that's the environmental and preliminary engineering work on that. We're working with Metrolink as partners to move that study forward. And that timeline is it's going to start up and kick up in December with a full report in February of 2013. We still are working closely with Metrolink on all the regional rail issues. As you know, we manage the right-of-way that Metrolink operates on in Los Angeles County. So we've been working very closely with them on grade crossing protection and other issues that have been popping up along the corridor and other issues involving our regional rail and high-speed rail stuff in Southern California. So with that, if there's any questions.
Questions. Thank you very much.
Okay.
CEO report.
Before you do that, actually...
I'm sorry.
I may have asked Art to do it because I wanted Art to repeat the comment that was made about MTA and Metrolink that was in the CEO's news that went out yesterday, because I think that's good for folks to hear. And I don't know if you recall it, but if not, I'll turn it to Art.
Yeah, I was flying, so I missed it. Director
Katz, I recall because I was there and along with Mr. Fenton received an award from the National Association of Railroad Passengers, commending both Metrolink and MTA for the outstanding efforts that we are accomplishing to bring transportation in the Southern California area into what they consider to be the modern era of not just cars.
Well, in fact, this is consistent with the whole idea of creating synergy between those services with the heart at Union Station. Tomorrow, Thursday, is the Great California Shakeout at 10:20 a.m. We'll be doing earthquake drills on our buses and trains. All are encouraged to duck, cover, and hold on at their workstations. We will make announcements on our buses and trains about this activity. Earlier this week, I was in Washington, met with a number of our local delegation offices, seven of them, along with Congressman Blumenauer, who's very active in terms of transit projects in the U.S. Big interest in the subway and the Crenshaw Project, America Fast Forward, the Los Angeles Corridor, and a variety of other projects. With that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you. Nothing else to come before this committee. I apologize to the Finance Committee, and we're done.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
Isn't that good stuff?
It is interesting.
Yeah. I told you.
Yeah, you're talking about the places.
No, I think it's really cool.